Well, hello, a very relaxed Dennis Prager here from my weekly, nearly weekly. I mean, I do whatever I can. Sometimes it's absolutely impossible. I'm traveling a lot. But what I will do then is I'll try to still squeeze it in or do one in advance before the trip. But I take this very seriously. It's completely non-scripted. It's totally spontaneous. So it's a risk for me because, you know, what if I say something truly regrettable? I'm stuck. This is my home. Did I say who I was? I'm Dennis Prager, but people know, people assume it. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home. This is my fireplace. This is one of my easy chairs, and this is my cigar. So I don't usually talk about something in the news. I have a 15 hours of national radio show each week, so 3 hours a day, Monday to Friday, and believe me, I get immersed in what's happening. So I use this as an opportunity to talk about all sorts of things. Sometimes if it's in the news, I will, but generally not. I get a chance to talk about things that matter, that are not in the news, as it were. Then I take your questions. Sometimes there are things in the news. So anyway, welcome to my home. It's great to be with you. And I am now going to talk to you about cigars. And before you give up because you have no interest in cigars, this is a bigger deal than it sounds. I'm not going to talk to you about the tobacco flavoring and yummy comparisons between Nicaraguan and Cuban, nothing like that. I am asked, I won't say every day, but I'm often asked, why do you smoke cigars? Aren't they dangerous? This is what I want to talk to you about, the word dangerous, and about cigars as an example, and about a philosophy of life. I have a philosophy of life on almost everything. I have had this is built into me. This is my approach to life, is to think things through and have a philosophy of life, be aware of what I'm doing, and then march on through life. So, for example, doctors often, more doctors than anybody else, will say to me, you know, there are real risks with tobacco and smoking, Dennis. We want you around a long time, or even more challenging, why do you do it? You know, you have so many young listeners, or viewers, I should say. And I take all of this very seriously, and I am very open about it, as you can see right now. So let me tell you my approach as I take a puff. So, well, there are many aspects to this question. One of them is I believe that it's important to enjoy life. This may sound so. Who doesn't think it's important to enjoy life? Well, it has ramifications. What I just said. I'll give you an example. This is really powerful. As many of you know, I am a religiously committed Jew, and I take my religion very seriously. And there is a very well. I don't know if it's very well known. A dear friend of mine, one of the most prominent rabbis in America, Rabbi David Woznica, has taught this often, that there are five questions. This is in the Talmud. Talmud is the second holiest work of Judaism. The holiest is the Bible, specifically for Jews, the Old Testament. And in the Talmud, which is as big as the Encyclopedia Britannica, it's gigantic, is philosophy and morality and religion and law and stories and legends and opinions and debates, especially debates. So here's one fascinating thing. Some rabbi, this is about 1800 years ago. Some rabbi said when we die, God will ask, when a Jew dies, specifically, when a Jew dies, God will ask him or her five questions. It's an interesting thought. And one of those five is, did you partake of every permitted pleasure? Interesting, huh? This is a religion, at least when understood, I think, normatively, is very keen on our enjoying life. It's very keen on self-discipline. It's very keen on, you know, non-hedonism, but it's very keen on enjoying life, as is my other great love, Americanism, as I call it. I'm not the only one to call it that name. And what do Americans have in their founding document? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, happiness and joy are not identical, but I'm not going to get into a semantic debate because it's not scientific anyway. So the notion that it is good to enjoy life is a very important one, very important one. People who enjoy life tend not to be mean. People, I mean, think about it, right? If you know, if you say about, boy, you know, he or she is really a love of life, a joie de vivre, as they say in French, a joy of living. You don't think of them as particularly harmful human beings, right? It's the morose, the somber, the non-smiling, the not enjoying life. So enjoying life is a big deal. And there are a lot of ways to enjoy life, obviously. So for me, one of them is cigars. So I have to weigh the joy it brings me versus a danger it has. You have to weigh that. Here's an example. Alcohol. I don't drink alcohol. It is not a philosophic or moral commitment. I just can't stand it. I don't enjoy it. It gives me a headache. So I have never, ever developed a taste for alcohol. I'm not even, you know, I will drink a beer once every 3 years in a social setting. And that's basically it. But I don't have anything against people who drink and who aren't, and obviously not alcoholic. Alcoholism is horrific. Just horrific. My heart breaks for them, their families, their friends, anyone in their lives. It's just a terrible thing, alcoholism. But I totally get it. My dad worked very, very hard every single day. Came home, had a cigar, and had scotch on the rocks. Every single day. And he loved it. And, you know, he worked hard. He was a good provider. He was an honorable man. He loved my mother, who was his wife. They were together 72 years, married 69. And he's the one who got me into cigars. He tried to get me into scotch, too, but it didn't work. That worked. My brother likes scotch, but I have no desire, as I told you, for alcohol. But again, you know, you could say, isn't alcohol dangerous? Believe me, alcohol is far more dangerous than cigars. I mean, it is not even, it's not even in the same universe. First of all, there's no such thing as addiction to cigars. There's addiction to cigarettes. I'm going to talk about the huge difference between cigarettes and cigars in a moment. There's no such thing as people write to me, oh, you know, you're a cigar addict, as if they know me anyway. I have a cigar a day, that's true, but you know what? There are weeks that go by that I don't smoke when I'm on the road, and there's no possibility. You know, you could ask my wife, am I going up the walls? Am I, you know, I don't even think about it. If I can't have it, I can't have it. If I can't have it, I do have it. I love it. It's a joy in my life. So I have to weigh, as anybody who drinks has to weigh, forgetting alcoholism. Has, you know, is it going to affect my liver? Is it going to impair my judgment? Is it going to do X, Y, or Z? You could ask 1,000 things, right? So people weigh, you have in all of life, everything you do, everything has a price. If even good things have a price, everything has a price. If you spend your day reading books, it has a price because then you didn't do other things. Part of my attitude towards life is know that everything you do, you have paid a price regarding something else that you didn't do or that it leads to. It's just inevitable. That's the way it works. That's the way life is. You can't do everything. So you have to choose. I have chosen this. It's about as benign a habit as exists. When you have, for example, You know, people, this is what really drives me crazy. I have asked parents, would you rather your kid, you know, smoke a cigar or smoke weed? And how many say smoke weed? It shows you how they don't know what they're talking about. They really don't. You don't inhale a cigar, you inhale weed. This doesn't affect your brain. Weed does. It blows my mind that there are parents who rather their kid smoked a joint than smoked a cigar. It shows the ignorance that the bombardment with regard to tobacco has caused. Now, cigarettes are dangerous. About a third of the people, according to the Lung Association, about a third of those who smoke cigarettes will die prematurely. That and what's the reason? There are a million carcinogens in it. Well, not a million. I hate exaggerating. There are many carcinogens in it. And you inhale it to your lungs. You don't inhale a cigar to your lungs. This is smoked for taste. Cigarettes are smoked for nicotine. By the way, nicotine in and of itself is not a problem. That's why I don't care if people smoke electronic cigarettes. So what if they're addicted to nicotine? What it's not a particularly harmful thing. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Better to be addicted to that than to a whole host of other things. See, I know the human being is not a saint. So I have to ask, what are the minimal sins that I could live with? This is a minimal sin. Okay, periodic alcohol or even daily alcohol if you keep it in check. This is a minimal sin. That's what people do. Cigarettes are dangerous. I fully acknowledge that. These are minimally dangerous. So, do we have water, by the way? I always forget. If you guys have one, that would be great. So, anyway, that's my belief that, you know, you maximize these little joys of life. For my wife, it's coffee. My wife drinks coffee all day. And it turns out, by the way, coffee is very healthy for you. Now, the amount she drinks, is it healthy? I have no idea. Does it disturb me? No, it doesn't disturb me. Does it bring her joy? We often say coffee is to her what a cigar is to me. Except I don't smoke a cigar all day, and she does drink coffee all day. It's just, you have to live on Earth. You know, there was a guy, I don't know if I mentioned this, and I know I mentioned it on my radio show. I even tweeted it out, and I don't tweet enough. I don't tweet much, and I should tweet more. So the Dallas Morning News had an article about a guy. I think he's the oldest living American. I think he's 111 or something. And he was asked, so the interviewer said, I'm sure everybody asks you, what's your secret to longevity? And he said, yes, I'm asked that all the time, and here's the answer I give all the time. My secret to longevity is God and cigars. And I thought, hey, that's my man. That is my man. God and cigars are secrets to, I mean, I'm not that old, but they are secrets to a big part of my joy of life. Thank you very much. God and cigars. By the way, people who are religiously active live 4 years longer. I think that was the latest statistic. Thank you very much. So, my father, by the way, smoked about 4 cigars a day, at least. I smoke 1 a day. He smoked 4 a day, and he lived to 96. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have cause of death secondhand smoke. It's such a, don't start me with secondhand smoke, is one of the most exaggerated, nonsensical items, that it's lethal. People believe, this is a very big, big problem what the media can do. If something is repeated enough, you know, my generation grew up with both parents smoking and we're the longest living generation in history. How do you explain that? We grew up with secondhand smoke in the car. My father smoked a cigar in the car. It made me sick, by the way. It didn't kill me, obviously. Now, is it bad if your kid has asthma? Yes, don't smoke in front of an asthmatic kid. This is called common sense. But we have a war on common sense. I had a feeling it went out. One minute. It did. I forgot my lighter. I didn't come well prepared to this particular one. No water and no lighter? That's terrible. All right. Anyway, that's the story. I want you to enjoy life. With and, you know, it's so amazing. The war on cigars is at the same time as the war to liberate weed. This doesn't tamper with my brain. It bothered me a great deal if my kids would smoke weed. I don't like tampering with the brain. Nobody gets dull. Hey, let me ask you a question, or even about cigarettes, for that matter. Would you rather your airplane pilot smoke the cigarette in the cockpit or smoke the joint? Huh? That's perfect. Thank you. All right. Is it time for questions? And if you got more on that, you know, send them in. I'm more than happy to answer things about that too. This is I love when people enjoy life. You know, I go all over America constantly. I fly virtually every week somewhere in the country. In fact, I'll be headed to Romania to speak. Thanks to PragerU, I'll be speaking in Romania because people watch our videos all over the world. I get invited all over the world, but I can't obviously do it all. When are we going to Romania? I'll let you know how that went. Speak to 1,000 young people in Bucharest, and I don't know how many in another city. So that's a wonderful thing. And this is, as I say, another one of the joys. That's why I'm a big fan of hobbies. Hobbies have always brought me a lot of joy. I work very hard, try to lead a good life, try to be a good dad, good husband, good friend, good worker. And I also want my little joys. My joys may not be your joys, and your joys may not be my joys. But if they don't compromise your values and they don't compromise unduly your health and they don't compromise other important things, have a great time. Yep, it's important. Okay, remember, God will ask you why you didn't partake of any permitted pleasure. Here we go. All right, let's see. All right, we'll do, since it's related, I'll do that afterwards. Remind me, okay? Because it's about cigars, but I'll move on to other subjects. Okay, Jeffrey, 18 Boston. Hello, Jeffrey, 18 Boston. Woo. Hi, Dennis. Hi, Jeffrey. It keeps scrolling down, so let me hold on. Hi, Dennis. When you say that no religion has ever stated they were against capital punishment, how do you explain a Catholic's view? Well, I know a lot about this, and that is in fact the position. Catholicism has always accepted capital punishment, given obviously a moral authority, a justice in the society. Catholicism, it is relatively brand new that the church has come out, and it's not doctrinal, but popes have spoken out against it. It is true, but it's not a doctrine of the church. You should look it up. If you're a Catholic and you're a serious Catholic, as I assume you are from this, but whatever, you should do research, Catholics for capital punishment, and you will read some major Catholic theologians who defend capital punishment as Catholics. Now, I admit that the most priests and recent popes have been opposed to it. I don't agree with them, and I know Catholics are allowed not to agree with them. Remember, papal infallibility, I think it's been invoked twice in the history of the papacy. It's pretty rare. I know one had to do with Mary and, Immaculate Conception. In other words, it was a theological doctrinal issue. It was not about the behavior of a given Catholic. So this is not an infallibility issue. It's not been invoked. And I stand with the Bible. The only law that's in all five books of the basis of the Bible for both Jews and Christians, the Torah, the first five books, the five books of Moses, it's the only law that's in all five books. It is the second thing God tells humanity after he destroys the world and Noah survives. The second thing. The first is be fruitful and multiply. And the second is take the life of murderers. That's a pretty powerful statement of how important it is as a, from a biblical standpoint, as a moral fundamental. There is something wrong with the society that keeps all murderers alive. That is the biblical view. That is my view. Okie doke. Next. Sergio 39, San Jose, Costa Rica. I've been to Costa Rica a couple of times. Beautiful country. Nice people. Hi, Dennis. Can you talk about relevant books or references of the conservative point of view through history? I have on my website, DennisPrager.com, a listing of the books that have most influenced me. That might be very helpful to you. I would certainly advocate my book, Still the Best Hope, which explains American values, leftist values, and Islamic values. It's like three books in one. It's called Still the Best Hope. That'll be a very, very helpful book for you. Raymond, 34, Capital Region, New York. Why do you think it is so difficult for conservatives to get their message out to the younger generations? Prager University does a good job, but I believe we need more. Of course we need more. We're the first to acknowledge it. We have filled a terrible, terrible hole. The reason is very simple. Who's going to give the message? Your high school civics teacher? I don't even think there is civics. Your high school social studies teacher? Your political science professor at college? Your gender studies professor? Who's gonna give you the conservative point of view in any academic institution today? Who's going to give you the conservative point of view on anything on TV or unless you search it out, you know, the internet generally? So what young people are exposed to is overwhelmingly from the left. And they try to keep us off campuses, as you well know. But that it's the only issue is exposure. I know for a fact that any open-minded young person or old person who is exposed to conservative arguments will at least rethink their position and in many instances change their position. But it's the movies are on the left, the news programs are on the left, theater is on the left, high school, elementary school, there more and more teachers won't even call kids boys and girls. They don't want to impose a gender identity. I would call that a form of child abuse. It's beautiful if boys and girls think they're boys and girls. Alex, 20, Pennsylvania. Are there any parts of the Bible you believe are to be disregarded as irrelevant? Well, that's the reason that I'm working on the biggest project of my life, my five-volume commentary on the first five volumes of the Bible. It's called The Rational Bible. I do truly believe it'll change your life if you read it. And my argument is that it is relevant. Now, I will admit that in Leviticus, there are a series of laws with regard to sacrifices that are not relevant, not currently relevant. I think they were relevant at the time. And I will explain that when I come to that book. But otherwise, overwhelmingly, the lessons are eternal. That's my job to explain how that is the case. But overwhelmingly, it is not only relevant, it is more relevant than today's newspaper. So take a look. Dan, 19, Virginia, are we morally obligated to debate and battle the left at every step of life? Well, except if they... No, not at every step of life. If you have a friend on the left and you guys play tennis together, enjoy your tennis. I don't want to see you guys having political arguments, social arguments. Enjoy each other. And especially, I feel, in families, families that are differ left, right, just love each other up. So I don't think at every step. Also, I don't even think arguing is the thing necessarily to do. My motto is, I prefer clarity over agreement. So what I try to do with people I differ with, I say, look, I don't want to win. I don't want to win a debate. And I'm very serious about that. I said, all I would like to do is clarify where we differ. That's very helpful. See my quote unquote debate with two left-wing students at Berkeley. Many people have watched it, and you should watch it, because all I do is clarify where we differ. And it's very helpful for people. Haven 21, Lucas, Michigan. I have always wondered why Jewish people encourage secularists to abide by Christianity. For example, Ben Shapiro encourages people to become Christians. But if Judaism is the highest truth, wouldn't Jews want everyone to become Jewish? It's fascinating, but that is not the goal of Judaism. The goal of Judaism is not to bring the world to Judaism. The goal of Judaism is to bring the world to the God of the Hebrew Bible. And if the way you get there is to return to your Christian roots, we're thrilled. It's fine with us. Judaism never claimed to be the only way to salvation. Never. It is not even hinted. It is not the only way to get to heaven. Judaism believes that good people go to heaven and bad people don't. God is a moral God. He judges people by their behavior. And if you're a good Christian, hey, that's terrific. That's why I speak of Judeo-Christian values so frequently. Not Judeo-Christian theology. Of course we have different theologies. But Judeo-Christian values, overwhelmingly, that is a valid and important term. So that's why. The highest truth is the truth, in my view, is the truth of the Torah. But there is no reason for non-Jews not to affirm it. Benjamin Franklin did, and he wasn't a Jew, and he wasn't a traditional Christian believer in the Trinity. He's what I call an ethical monotheist. That's our goal. John 22. How's our timing, boys and girls? Yeah? John 22, Pasadena, California. Should you date outside your religion? That's a toughie. I have a better answer to should you marry outside your religion? Who you date is not the same thing. I believe ideally people should marry members of the same religion, whether they convert to that religion or they're both already there. There are many ways in which marriages can have tension. Why add another one? Now, if both of you have no religious instincts or feelings or commitments, then that's probably best for you to marry another nothing or none, as they say, N-O-N-E. Maybe so. Although even then it's not so easy, because when you have kids, all of a sudden it might be of concern. Well, how do I want to raise my kids? Marriage is not just about you unless you're certain you don't want kids. But if you want children, then it is a question worth dealing with before you get married. It's tough stuff because you can really love a person who's terrific. And then this could be an obstacle, but it can be. I know someone who's deeply in love with someone, and yet one of them is an atheist and one is not. And the one who is not says, well, you know, I don't want to raise my children as atheists. And I want to share this commitment to a higher power. And I understand that. Love does not conquer all. I wish it did, but it doesn't. So it's something to think about. So with that, and enjoying one of the permitted pleasures, thank you for being with me. We love to hear from you. Watch the PragerU videos. And with that, Until next week, I'm Dennis Prager, and bye from my home.